The sovereign herself commissioned it as a present for her grandson. Kavax nearly drools at the sight of the monster of a ship. What a loving woman! Assuming this is not contrived, Pliny inspects the hollow, how did you come upon this information? Little birds whisper into my ears, too. Don't be coy. It is important. My sources are mine, just as yours are your own, Pliny.
So you want to steal the Moonbreaker from Ganymede? Pliny asks.
That's an act of war. I chuckle. No, you misunderstand. I want to steal all of the ships. Chapter 26 Puppet Master. Pliny glances worriedly at Augustus. Do this, and this war does not end till one side is ash.
It's already that way,
Kavax begins.
This is different, Pliny crows. It expands the scope.
My father is right, Daxa declares. We are already in open rebellion.
Pliny slaps his hand down. This is different. This declares war on the society, not the Bellona, not the sovereign as a singular person. Ganymede has not harmed us. This will fracture everything. Augustus sits quietly, his cold eyes staring at the Moonbreaker on the hollow. Without looking at me, he asks, You said there were two parts to this plan. What is the second? I change the hollow. The academy replaces the shipyards. Ships ring its dull grey surface. Asteroids rotate in the backdrop.
Those ships are ancient,
a balding praetor named Lysenus says before I can begin.
Useless in a fight. Is your plan to steal them too?
No, Praetor Lysenus. My plan is to steal the students.
I add another visual. Mars's institute joins the academy. Then another institute, Venus's. Then Earth's two institutes. Then the Galilean institutes and Saturn's. Then more, till nearly a dozen images float in the air. I want to steal all of the students, not to fight, but to ransom.
Gory hell!
Mustang bursts out laughing.
Are you insane, Darrow?
Augustus frowns.
Virginia, control yourself. I am under control, Father. Your attack dog isn't.
You forget your place.
And you forget how Claudius looked dead on the ground. Leto, too. Do you want that for the rest of us?
She regrets the words as soon as they leave her lips.
Shut your mouth, girl!
Augustus shudders with wrath. His bony fingers clutch the edge of the table till it creaks.
You've been unhinged since you let that Bellona boy between your legs. Walking in here like a pixie pump, eating that apple like a child. Stop being a sideshow whore and live up to your name.
Like your remaining son?
She asks. He takes a long, calming breath. You will be quiet or you will leave. Mustang grinds her teeth together, but stays uncharacteristically silent. Pliny's lips curl in a rather pleased smile.
Don't blame her, my goodman, if she's already tired of war,
Pliny says, softly placing a knife in a wounded enemy.
After so many nocturnal summits spent engaging in horizontal diplomacy with the Bellona, her stamina isn't what it used to be.
Kavax lunges at Pliny. Daxo pulls him back just in time, but it's Mustang who is first to speak over the uproar.
I can defend my own honour, my goodman. But from Pliny, such insults are to be expected.
After all, I would be bitter too if my wife bent over backwards to make sure so many of your young mercenaries learned how to properly sheathe their swords.
Pliny stares angrily at her as she rises, continuing,
I left Mars to pursue knowledge in the sovereign's court. I did not abandon my family, as so many of you have suggested, and I'm not sorry I left and missed conversations such as this. For you goodmen seem good only at one thing, and that is bickering. Yet you quickly come to agreement upon me as an item of ridicule. Curious, is it because you see me as a threat to your power, or is it simply because I'm a woman?
She peers at the few scattered women around the table.
If that is the case, you forget yourselves. This society was founded by men and women based on merit. The dear Politico Pliny is right, however. I would have avoided this war. In fact, I tried. Why else do you think I allowed Cassius Abelona to court me? But war is here, and I will protect my family again from all threats, those from without and from within.
Augustus lets slip the smallest, barest of smiles, a twin to the first. His love is the most conditional I've ever seen. How quickly he can call his daughter a whore, then smile as she reclaims what power she lost in the room. Suddenly, she matters.
Then what do you think of my plan? I ask.
I think it is dangerous. It spreads the war without ensuring our benefit. It is immoral and sets dangerous precedent. But then again, war is inherently immoral, so we must simply decide how far we want to go.
You know Octavia better than I
say.
How far will she go?
Mustang is quiet for a moment.
If we have a victory and sue for peace either from a position of strength or weakness, she will accept the overture.
You see?
Pliny beams. Mustang isn't finished.
She will suggest a neutral location, and on that day when we go to make peace, she will do everything in her power to kill all of us.
Pliny looks back and forth between us, realizing how easily he's been played. So there's no going back. Win or die? I ask flatly.
Indeed, Dara, she says with a smile. Win or die?
It seems you have been outmaneuvered, Pliny. We move forward with Dara's plan.
Augustus stands.
Tomorrow, Praetor Licinus will take command of this vessel and its fleet and lead the sovereign's fleet on a chase, while I take a small strike group of corvettes and frigates to the gas giants. With them, I will raid the shipyards of Ganymede.
I will go with you, my liege,
Kavax booms. His fox jumps off his lap at the noise to tremble under the table.
No.
Kavax's face falls.
No, but Nero. The defense is there. Battle stations, destroyers, torch ships. They will shred any force of corvettes you bring.
His large hands gesture imploringly.
Let us do this for you.
You forget who I am, my friend.
Apologies, I did not mean...
Augustus waves the apology away and turns to Mustang. Daughter, you will take what elements of the fleet you need to execute the second portion of Dara's plan.
Watching Pliny now is like watching a child try to hold on to a handful of sand. He doesn't understand the course things have taken. But he's not fool enough to make his play now. He will wait in the grass, like the snake he is.
The arch-governor turns to me.
Darrow, what did you say to me before you shed Cassius's blood?
I said that you should be king of Mars.
My friends!
Augustus sets his thin hands down on the table, fingers rigid.
Darrow has demonstrated powers none of you possess. He predicts what I want. I want to be king.
Make me so. Dismissed.
The room empties. I wait with Augustus. He wants a private word. Mustang brushes close to me as she passes, winking playfully.
Nice speech, I mutter.
Nice plan.
She squeezes my hand, and then she is gone.
In league again?
Augustus observes. He gestures me to close the door. I sit near him. The hard lines of his face deepen as he stares into my eyes. From a distance, the lines are invisible. But this close, they are the things that make his face. Loss gives a man lines like this, reminding me, this is the man you do not anger, the man you do not owe.
We can do away with righteous indignation before it finds a place on your tongue.
He steeples his fingers, examining the manicured cuticles.
The question is simple, and you will answer it. Are you a Democrat?
I had not expected this. I try not to look around nervously.
No, my liege. I am no Democrat.
Not a reformer? Not someone who wants to alter our compact to create a more fair, more decent society?
Man is organized properly now, I say, pausing, except for a few notable exceptions.
Pliny?
Pliny. You each have your gifts, and you would do well not to question my judgment in keeping him close. Yes, my liege, but I am no more a Democrat than you are a loon.
He does not smile, as I intended. Instead, he presses a button, and the speech I used to win over the PAX comes on the speakers. An HC hollow shows the faces of different colors.
Watch their expressions.
He watches mine as he cycles through a series of video clips from different parts of the ship as the crew listens to the speech I gave before they rose against their gold commanders.
Do you see that?
That right there. The spark. Do you?
I see it.
That is hope.
The man who killed my wife waits for my face to give me away. Good luck with that. Hope. Are you saying I made a mistake? I ask.
He recalls old words.
Hateful to me as the gates of Hades is that man who hides one thing in his heart and speaks another.
My heart has always been laid bare.
So you say.
His lips part slightly, hissing the words. But as terrorists spread lies over the net, as bombings rack our cities, as the low colors rumble with displeasure, as we begin a war despite the termites in our foundation, you say this.
Any chaos is shut your mouth. Do you know what would happen if the other governors thought us reformers? If the other houses looked at mine as a bastion of equality and democracy?
He points to a glass.
Our potential allies.
He brushes the glass off the table, letting it shatter. Points to another.
Our lives.
It falls and shatters too.
It is bad enough my daughter had the ear of the reformer bloc on Luna. You cannot seem political. Stay a warrior. Stay simple. Do you understand?
What if the low colors rally to us? I want to ask. But he would have his obsidians kill me where I stand.
I understand.
Good.
Augustus looks at his hands, twisting the ring there. Hesitancy creeps over him.
Can I trust you? In what way?
A scornful laugh bursts from his mouth.
Most would say yes without thinking. Most men are liars. Can I trust you with power, autonomous from my own?
He scratches his jaw idly.
That is when many leave their lords. It is when hunger fills their eyes. The Romans learned this time and again. It is why they did not let generals cross the Rubicon with their armies without the permission of the Senate. Men with armies soon begin to realize how strong they are, and they always know that their particular strength is not forever. It must be used with haste, before their army leaves them. But hasty decisions can ruin empires. My son, for instance, must never be allowed such power.
He has his businesses.
That is a slow power. Cleverly done on his part, if unfit for my name. Slow power can grind away any stagnant enemy, but fast power, one that can travel where you go, do what you wish it to as effectively as a hammer hitting a nail, that is the power that lops off heads and steals crowns.
Can I trust you with it?
You must.
I am the only man who can go to Lorne.
Surprise flashes in his eyes. He is unused to having his machinations guessed.
He buries the surprise quickly, unwilling to give credit where credit is due.
You knew already. You wish me to approach Lorne, ask for his help, because he taught me the razor.
And because he loves you.
I blink dumbly.
I am not sure that's the word.
He had four sons. Three died in front of him. The last, Lysander's father, in an accident, as you know. I believe you remind him of them, though you're in fact more capable and less moral, which is to your advantage. But as much as he loves you, Lorne hates me.
He hates Octavia more, my liege.
Still, it won't be easy to convince him to join us.
Then I won't give him a choice.
Chapter 27 Jelly Beans. The Telemannises wait for me in the hall. Kavax takes me into a hug that cracks my back. Daxo nods his head. I'm left feeling dazed between the two of them. It is the first time I've spoken to either without violence afoot. Truth be told, I've avoided them for shame of what I let happen to Pax.
My boy only ever lost to you,
Kavax says.
Little Pax, if he was to fall to a knee, it is no shame to have fallen in friendship. I only wish he could have taken Olympus with you. That would have been a sight.
I would have liked to have seen him take Proctor Jupiter's armor.
Daxo grins. I was Jupiter House myself, Primus till I lost to Carnus Abelona.
Then I believe we have a mutual enemy.
Besides the scheming little bastard that killed my baby brother?
Daxo asks softly.
We have many shared enemies, Andromedus.
Kavax scoops up his fox. It licks his neck and peers fiercely at me before it nuzzles into his thick red beard. It has a white chest, black legs, and dark russet fur covering the rest of its body. Thicker and hardier than a normal fox, and weighing nearly 35 kilograms, it really is more wolf-like in size.
Foxes are beautiful creatures,
Kavax says, stroking the beast.
Daxo nods.
Mischievous, omnivorous, resistant to poaching, monogamous. Very special and able to expand their hunting grounds, even in the territory of wolves.
He looks up at me darkly, but because of a damn quirk of nature, foxes fare poorly against jackals. We asked Augustus to banish Adrius. For a time he was, yet now he returns to the fleet. A crime, I say. They nod.
Daxo sets a hand on my shoulder.
The girls, my sisters and mother, I mean, wanted you to know that we do not hold you accountable for Pax's death. We loved that little boy, and we know you only ever mean him honors. We know you named your ship for him, and will not forget it. Once friends, always friends, that is our family's way.
Kavax nods. To every word his remaining son says. He tosses his fox a handful of jelly beans.
So, if you need us,
Daxo suggests, nodding to the war room,
you need merely ask, and the house Telemannus will lend itself to your cause.
You mean that?
I ask.
It would have made my Pax happy.
Older Kavax rumbles. I clasp his hand and try my luck. You'll forgive me my manners, but I need you now. Great eyebrows arch as the two behemoths share a look of surprise.
Investigate, Sophocles, investigate,
Kavax says excitedly. The large fox at his legs slips forward warily to investigate me, sniffing my knees, peering at my shoes and hands. It weaves through my legs in its search. Then it pounces on me, putting forepaws on my hips and digging its snout into my pocket. Sophocles resurfaces with two jelly beans, chewing contentedly.
Magic! Kavax booms, clapping me on the shoulder. Sophocles has discovered a propitious sign of approval by magic! What a good omen! Daxo, my son, summon your sisters and mother. The reaper calls. House Telemannus must answer.
The girls are visiting Neptune, father. There'll be a few months.
Well, then we must answer.
Couldn't agree with you more, father.
I'll have instructions within the hour, I say.
Great anticipation!
Kavax thumps away.
We await them with great anticipation!
He roars compliments at passing oranges, terrifying them with his wide grinning approval. Daxo and I watch on.
Does he really believe in magic?
I ask.
He says gnomes steal earwax from him at night. Mother thinks he's been hit too many times on the head.
Daxo backs away, following his father. But he can't hide his clever smile as he pops a jelly bean into his mouth. And I see where the ones in my pocket came from.
I say he just lives in a more entertaining world than we do. Call on us soon, Reaper. Father is eager.
After meeting over a hollow with the jackal to bring him up to speed on my plan, and adjusting it according to a few of his recommendations, I have Orion set a course for Europa. It will take 2 weeks.
Roke joins me on the bridge, watching the skeleton crew of blues.
He doesn't speak, yet it's the first time he's sought me out since we left Luna. It's a weight hanging over my head.
I'm sorry, I begin. I don't want to talk about Quinn, he says quietly. I know you wanted this war, engineered it instead of trusting me to buy your contract and protect you. What I don't know is why you drugged me.
I wanted to protect you, because I knew I would need you after the gala, and I couldn't risk your safety.
What about what I need? He asks. You don't have the right to make choices for me because you're afraid it might interrupt your plans. Friends don't do that.
You're right. It was wrong of me. I nod slowly, meaning it.
Wrong to stick a needle in my neck.
Beyond wrong. But no, the intent was good, even if the idea and execution were as stupid as they come. If I have to get on my knees, There's an image. I know he's joking, but his face does not laugh or smile as he turns and walks away. Chapter 28 The Storm Sons.
You come to me at the head of a storm,
my friend says, grey beard blowing sideways in the wind, as he looks at the waves far beneath.
Did you know there are boys here on this ocean world who take skiffs into gales worse than this? Lads from the dregs of the greys, reds, even browns. Their bravery is a mad, crazed sort.
He points out from the balcony with a heavy finger to the roiling black water, where waves crest 10 meters high.
They call them storm sons.
The gravity here is maddening. Everything floats. At 0.136 of Earth's gravity, every step I take must be measured, controlled, else I'll burst upward 15 feet and have to wait to flutter back down. A fight here would be like a ballet underwater. I wear grav boots just to move comfortably. The old man watches the ocean world move around his island. He is, as he always told me to be, a stone amid the waves, wet, yet unimpressed by all that swirls about him. Salt water spray drips from his beard. Burnished gold eyes blink against the storm's bitter wind.
When you are in the salt, you feel like every gale is the world ender. Every wave the greatest that has been. These boys ride the gales in rapture at their own glory. But every now and then, a true storm rises. It shatters their masts and rips the hair from their heads. They do not last long till the sea swallows them whole. But their mothers have wept their deaths long before. As I wept for yours the first day we met.
He stares at me intensely, mouth pinched behind his thick beard.
I never told you, but I was not raised in a palace or in a city like many of the peerless, you know. My father thought there to be two evils in the world, technology and culture. He was a hard man, a killer like the rest of them, but his hardness was not found in what he could do, but in what he wouldn't do, in his restraint, in the pleasures he denied himself and his sons. He lived to 163 without the help of cell rejuvenation. Somehow he lived through 8 iron rains, but still he never valued life, because he took it too often. He was not a man to be happy.
I watch the former rage knight, Lorne Au Arcos, lean over the balcony of his castle. It is a limestone fortress set amid a sea 90 kilometers deep. Modern lines shape the place. It is not medieval, but a meld of past and present, glass and steel making hard angles with the stone island. So like the man I respect above all other golds of his generation. Like him, this castle is a harsh place when the storms come. But when the storms fade, sunshine will bathe this place, shining through her glass walls, glinting off her steel supports. Children will run its 10 kilometer length, through its gardens, along its walls, down to the harbor. Wind will tickle their hair, and all that Lorne will hear from his library is the crying of gulls, the crash of the sea, and the laughter of his grandchildren and their mothers, whom he guards in place of his dead sons. The only one missing is little Lysander. If all gulls were like him, reds would still toil beneath the earth, but he would have them know their purpose. It doesn't make him good, but it makes him true. He's thick and broad and shorter than I. He lets his empty whiskey tumbler go and permits the wind to swoop it sideways. It falls and the sea swallows it whole.
They say you can hear the dead storm sons whooping in the wind, he mutters. I say it's the crying of their mothers.
Storms of court have a way of drawing people back in, I say. He laughs a derisive laugh, one that scorns the idea that I would know anything about the storms of court, anything about the winds that blow. I came to him in secret, flying with a single ship, my 5-kilometer destroyer, Pax. I told my master he would not help us, but I held on to the hope he would want to help me. Yet now that I see Lorne Au Arcos again in the knotted flesh, I'm reminded of the nature of the man, and I worry. He knows my captains, and lieutenants are listening through the comm unit in my ear. I paid him respects and showed it to him, so that he would not assume our conversation to be a private one.
After more than a century of living, my body does not yet betray me.
One would think him to be in his mid-60s at first glance. Only his scars truly age him. The one on his neck, like a smile, was given to him 4 decades ago by a Stained in the Moon King's Rebellion, when the governors of Jupiter's moons thought to make their own kingdoms after Octavia deposed her father as sovereign. The one that claims part of his nose came from the Ash Lord, when they dueled as youths.
You've heard the expression, the duty of the son is the glory of the father.
I have said it myself.
He grunts. I have lived it. I have lost many for my own glory. I have set my ship into the storm on purpose, each time with women and children in tow.
He lets the waves speak for a moment. They crash on the rocks and then pull backward, slurping as they go, drawing things to the sea they call Discordia.
It is not right to live so long, I think. My great-granddaughter was born last night. I still have the smell of blood on my fingers.
He holds them out, like tree roots, crooked and calloused from the holding of weapons. They tremble slightly.
These took her from the darkness to the light, from warmth to the cold, and cut the cord themselves. It would be a fine world if that was the last flesh they cut.
He relaxes his hands and sets them on the cold stone. I wonder what Mustang would say to this man. Seeing them face to face would be like watching fire trying to catch on stone. She balked at my plan in public, but then again, that was all our design. Plans within plans within plans.
To think about what hands feel, Lorne mutters. These have felt the lifeblood of my sons as their hearts pumped it out of their bodies. They felt the cold of a razor's hilt as they stole the dreams of youth. They've worn the love of a girl and a woman, and then felt those heartbeats fade to silence. All for my glory. All because I chose to ride the sea. All because I do not die easily, as most.
He frowns.
Hands, I think, were not meant to feel so much.
Mine have felt more than I'd wish, I say. I feel the snap go through them that I felt at Eos hanging. The texture of her hair. I remember the warmth of Pax's blood, the chill of Leah's pale face in the cold morning after Antonia butchered her, the grainy red smear of Humanthus blossoms, Mustang's bare hip as we lay by the fire.
You are young still. When you're white-haired, you'll have felt even more.
Some men don't grow old.
No hell diver does.
No, some don't. He pokes Augustus's lion's badge on my dark uniform. And lions do not live so long as griffins. We can fly away from things, you see.
He brandishes his own family ring and flaps his arms foolishly, drawing a smile from me. He wears it along with his House Mars ring.
You were a Pegasus once, were you not?
It was the symbol, is the symbol of Andromeda's.
My false gold family.
But the symbol reminds me of Io. She pointed out the Andromeda galaxy to me before she died. It means so much and so little, all at once.
There's honour in staying what you were, he says. Sometimes we have to change. Not all of us are born rich, as you. Let us go find Icarus in the forest.
He mentioned him often on Mars, but I've never seen Lorne's favourite pet.
Carolina conspired with Vincent to make him a new toy. I think you'll appreciate it.
Where are your children? I'd love to see them again.
East Wing, till you leave.
I'm that dangerous.
He does not answer.
I follow my friend in off the balcony, just as one of Europa's clouds spits blue lightning across the dark sky. Her oceans buck and heave as great swells of water slither and seep along the white walls, as if the world of oceans conspired to swallow the man-made island. Despite all this, the castle and the raging storm still seem so small when I see how Jupiter consumes the night sky behind the clouds, a textured gas giant staring down at us like the head of some great marble god. As we walk through the stone villa, Lorne happily greets every servant we pass. He sees people, not colours. Most have been with him for years. I should have studied with him. But then I would have ended up here, a better man, but unable to change anything so many months' journey from the core. Children's toys litter the halls. His family is here, dozens of loved ones he brought together after he left public life. Most live scattered in the southern archipelagos, in the warmer waters near the equator. Hurricanes forced them north this month to take refuge with Grandfather Lorne. Seems the storm followed them. He pushes open a grand glass gate, leading me into the center of his citadel. Here he keeps himself a forest, one several acres large and open to the air. The walls stretch around the forest, closing it off from the vicious waves. Lorne's standards whip high in the air, a roaring purple griffin on a field of snow white. Rain falls on the trees, hissing into their needles until he activates a pulse bubble. Then the rain sizzles on its roof and folds up in thick clouds of vapor. He walks ahead of me, and I linger, taking small black spikes, no longer than my fingernails, from a hidden pouch in my sleeve. I scatter them through the moss just outside the door.
You came to me in a stolen vessel of war, asking for my ships and my men.
Why?
Lorne asks, looking back curiously.
I speed up my gait and drop a few more spikes when he turns again. I'm waiting for him to mention Lysander.
Because half of Mars is still held by forces loyal to the Bellona and the Sovereign. To free Mars from them, we need your ships and your men. Once we have them, the Moon Lords and the Arch-Governors of the Rim will come to our aid against the Core.
So you need me to aid you in your treason.
Is it treason for a dog to bite its master's hand when the master tries to kill it? I ask.
Terrible metaphor.
He stops, peers around the forest, searching.
Ah.
We set off again. The point is, I need your help. He spits on the mossy ground and motions me to follow him up a hillside. My boots crack a water-sodden log.
Why should I care about you?
Because you trained me.
I also trained Ajar Grimace. For some reason, I think you like me more than her.
And why is that?
I have a sense of humor.
He laughs.
Ajar can be funny.
Surely you're joking.
You meet a man, you know him. You meet a woman, she knows you.
He laughs to himself about some memory.
Might be easier thinking her some terror in the night, but she's flesh and blood. She has friends, she has family, and she thinks you a threat to them.
Yet she's the one who killed my friend.
Yes, I heard. You had the child. Clever tactic.
He squints back at the razor curled around my arm.
Does everyone wear their razor like a fool now?
It's the fashion.
It's meant to be looped on the hip. You'll cut your arm off by accident.
He sighs.
Your generation. So arrogant. Changing things for no reason. I wonder, arrogant boy, did you think that if you rode in here with your stolen ship that I, a man of a century, would follow you to battle? That I would put in danger all my servants, all my family, all I love, for you? Someone who rejected me when I asked him to join my house?
I ignore his bitterness.
You left the society for a reason, Lorne. Can you remember why? To avoid loud fools.
I think you left because you thought the society sick, because it was not worth sacrificing for any more.
Stop barking at me, puppy.
So I'm right.
No, you're not right.
He wheels angrily.
I left the society not because it is sick, but because it is dead. The society was created to instill order. Men were made to sacrifice so that humanity endured. They were given colors, lives limited and ordered, so that we could destroy the timeless cycle of our race, prosperity to greed to war. Gold was meant to shepherd the other colors, not devour them. Now we are trapped again in that cycle, the very thing we endeavored to avoid. So the society, the beautiful sum of all human enterprise, it's been dead and rotting for hundreds of years, and those who fight over it are but vultures and maggots.
So it wasn't Brutus's death. I speak of his youngest son, who was married to Octavia Loon's deceased daughter.
That was an accident.
A convenient accident, I say. There are rumors that Octavia's daughter was organizing a coup against her mother.
I don't entertain rumors, he says darkly.
If you help me, I can give you your grandson back.
Lysander has been raised so long ago with poison in his ear that now it's in his blood. He is not my kin.
You're not that cold. Lorne, I've met the boy. He's more like you than her. He isn't wicked. Fight for him.
Lorne stares quietly at the rain falling against the pulse shield.
You fight a tyrant to replace her with a tyrant, he says wearily. This is the same game I have seen 100 times. Do you even know who you serve?
I have a feeling you're about to tell me.
I'll not stop being your teacher just because you stop listening. Sit. I don't want Icarus to be bothered by this damn story.
He sits on a large stone and instructs me to take a place opposite him.
I do.
He hunches forward and plays with the thick House Mars ring on his finger.
House Augustus was always strong. I'm sure you know that. Even when Mars was little more than a mine for Helium-3. They bribed or killed their way into owning most of the governmental contracts, and as their pockets swelled, so did their influence. They became, along with several other families, including the Bellona and my own, the Lords of Mars. There was one family of greater power, however, named Silas. They controlled the Arch-Governorship and were favored by the Senate and the sitting sovereign. When your master, then simply called Nero, was 7, his father found himself in dispute with Julius Albellona, Cassius's grandfather. Nero's father attempted to have the Browns who served the Bellona poison the entire family at supper. The plan failed. A house war began. Nero's father summoned his bannermen and led them against the Bellona and the Arch-Governor Silas, who had declared his forces for Julius Albellona. The sitting sovereign did not intervene, and instead allowed the two families to go to war. Eventually, Nero's father found himself besieged in Aegea when his fleet was destroyed and captured around Phobos. Silas put House Augustus to death, sparing only young Nero from punishment. He was allowed to live so that an aged family that had partaken in the conquering did not disappear from history. It is said that the Arch-Governor Silas gave young Nero grapes to quench his thirst, because there was no water, as the city burned around them. After that, he raised him in his own court. 20 years later, Nero, who had always been considered an honourable and honest man, much unlike his wicked father, asked for Iona Albellona's hand in marriage. She was the youngest and favourite daughter of old Julius. He stares up at water droplets falling from the needles of overhanging evergreens. I knew her well. My sons were her playmates. I knew Nero, too. I liked him, even if he was a little cold as a child. With hopes of mending the lingering wounds of past generations and making Mars strong and unified, Arch-Governor Silas agreed. Bellona married Augustus. It was a beautiful wedding. I attended, representing the sovereign as the Rage Knight, and I had a wonderful time of it. I had never seen Iona so happy as she was in that stern young man's arms. But that night, when the Bellona family returned to their estate with the rest of their family, a package arrived. Inside, old Julius found his daughter's head. Grapes stuffed in Iona's mouth, along with 2 wedding rings. He summoned his daughters and sons, including Cassius's father, and flew to the citadel to ask for justice from Arch-Governor Silas, as he had 20 years prior, when the Augustuses first rose up. But instead of his old friend, he found young Nero on the Arch-Governor's throne, backed by Praetorians and 2 Olympic knights. I was among them, having been told that Silas was a threat to the society by my sovereign. I did as I was commanded. The house of Silas was wiped out and stricken from record. I found out later, Nero contrived an agreement with the daughter of the sitting sovereign. You know her as Octavia Auloon. Younger then, she convinced her father to give Nero the throne of Mars and his revenge. In return, she earned Nero's support when she led the faction that overthrew and killed her father 5 years later. That is the man you started a war for.
I didn't know this, I say quietly.
History is written by the victors.
Lauren looks at me, and the lines on his face seem to deepen.
I don't want to go to war, Darrow. In my time I have seen a moon burn because one man would not bow. I have led a million warriors shot from warships to invade a planet. You cannot begin to understand the horror of it. You think only of how beautiful it will be, but they are men. They are women. They have families. And they die by the thousands. And you will be helpless to protect even the best of your friends.
Ah!
He points uphill.
There's Icarus.
Rain drips from the pines as we push through the lower tree boughs to find Icarus, Lauren's pet griffin, sleeping in a great bed of moss on a high promontory inside the small forest. Icarus's paws curl into his body. His wings curve around him as he sleeps, iridescent and glittering with droplets of water. His great eagle's head is nearly larger than I, one of his eyes half the size of my skull. The carvers made him well.
He looks peaceful when he sleeps, Lorne says.
He's bigger than any I've seen, I say, unable to conceal the awe in my voice.
You've not been to the pole of Mars or Earth, then?
No. Where did you buy him?
Martian carvers made him for my family. Damn that fashionable Zanzibar twit. Icarus is of the same genus as the beasts in the high eyries in Mars's North Pole. The ones they use to terrify obsidians into believing magic is real.
He strokes the sleeping giant.
Are you still in love with the Arch-Governor's daughter?
He glances back at me hopefully.
Is that why you do this? I heard about her and the Bellona.
It isn't about what happened between her and Cassius.
No.
He sighs.
I could have understood that, at least. You were sloppy in that. You should know. The Arrhenicus folly would have done him in 3 moves.
I wasn't sloppy. I was making a show.
Sloppy. Violets are showmen. Did I train you to be a showman?
I move past him to pet Icarus. So you do care about me? He does not answer me for a spell. And it's then that I know the moment I've dreaded most is nearly upon us.
In another life, you would have been one of my sons, Darrow. I would have found you earlier, before whatever happened that filled you with this rage. I would not have raised you to be a great man. There is no peace for great men. I would have had you be a decent one. I would have given you the quiet strength to grow old with the woman you love. Now all I can give you is a chance.
Icarus!
He booms. His griffin stirs by his side, its amber eyes showing me my reflection. The sound shudders as the creature moves, uprooting a tree as easily as I'd pull a hair. I move back from the beast, unsure of Lorne's intentions.
What's going on? I ask Lorne. Look to your ship.
He points upward in the night. Through a break in the clouds, we can see my long ship glittering in orbit. She's no longer alone. 10 torch ships come for her now, slipping around the cover of Europa's equator to capture the Pax.
A Praetorian death squad waits for you inside my home, Darrow. Aja Augrimus leads them. They will take you, chain you, and bring you before the Sovereign.
You betrayed me?
I ask.
No. They arrived days ago. They threatened.
What could I do?
Kelenau Bellona leads their fleet. It will destroy or capture your ship. I can't stop that. But I do not want you to die. So Icarus will take you to an island where I have hidden a ship for you. Use it to escape.
Will they hurt your family if I escape?
They may try, he growls. That is the consequence of your decision and mine.
He stands with his back to the sea.
I want to fade in peace. So please, leave, and never return, Darrow.
He gestures to Icarus, and I see a thin saddle upon the beast.
The new toy of which he spoke.
But I do not need to flee. I shake my head for what is about to happen.
I'm sorry, my friend, but I can't allow that.
Allow?
He asks, turning.
You will join us in this war.
My razor uncoils, whether you like it or not. I speak into my calm, telling the howlers to prepare to rise and the titans to bring the ships around.
The blood drains from his face, and he looks at the beast emblazoned upon my tunic. A lion after all.
Chapter 29 Old Man's Wrath. I prepared the trap before I even left the fleet. All secrets find themselves whispered into Pliny's ears, and he would wish for nothing more than my timely demise, particularly after I provoked him in the arch-governor's meeting. So he did his work. He schemed and plotted, and found himself an ally against the big, bad Darrow Ow Andromedus in the Sovereign herself, a fact that I will be happy to share with Augustus as soon as possible. The Sovereign's ships hid themselves among the ruins of a derelict space station that was once used as a base of terraforming operations. Kellen Ow Bellona was smart, but predictable. My larger secondary force, a detachment of Telemannus ships, which I hid behind another smaller moon's mass, will ambush the Bellona force in 60 seconds, slingshotting around the other side of the moon by using its gravity to gain velocity. With Roke in command, I'll have 10 Bellona ships to add to my personal armada by day's end.
You knew,
Lorne accuses me quietly, his thick hand gripping my uniform at the neck and shaking me.
You knew.
And he knows what this means for him. It is not simply my victory, it is his defeat. One way or another, he must ally himself. And I've made it easy for him to pick a side.
If you're a fox, play the hare. Isn't that what you taught me?
But it would look like you knew I set a trap for her, that you slipped news of her trap to me.
I touch his shoulder as he releases me. I am sorry, friend, truly, but you are part of this war. His jaw works, but he says nothing.
The Sovereign will send her Praetorians again to Europa once I have left, I say. Only this time they'll come for you and yours. Their black and purple ships will shell you from orbit till your islands and your cities on the archipelagos and mainland and the rising mountains in the south are made of glass and swallowed by the seas. The waters will weep over your shattered towers, and of your house there will be nothing but crypts in the deep. Unless we win.
His eyes seek in me something to give him time, but instead he sees only what made him take me under his wing from the start. Himself. Most men would give anything to see that, but here and now he wishes to see anything else.
I put my family at risk to help you escape. I took you in, taught you, and you betray me like the others, like Aja.
You look for pity. You let me come here, Lorne. You would have consigned my friends above to torture and death even as you gave me a path to escape. But my friends will not be prisoners.
I point upward to the fiery gashes in the night sky as my secondary force rockets around Europa.
Hate me. But fight at my side, I tell Arcos. Only then will your family survive.
I put a hand out for my former teacher.
He pulls out his razor. I should kill you.
Can I come and shoot